This is WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick Community Radio.
Community support for Amy's Kid Show is provided in part by Woodbury Mountain Toys, featuring a selection of toys and games for kids of all ages. Located at 24 State Street in Montpelier, Vermont. More information at woodburymountaintoys.com. Come in and play with us.
We bring you the following show with the intention of providing a wide range of voices about the issues of the day. We encourage listeners to critically examine claims and other statements.
Good morning, everybody. Rise and shine. This is Amy, and it's time for Amy's Kids Show. And I am so excited to be here this morning. Here in the chair at the studio with a guest. Oh, it's so exciting to have a guest in the studio again this week. We had guests last week, but remember that they couldn't come inside. They were frogs, and frogs need to stay moist and slimy, and we really shouldn't pick them up and stuff because they need their slime. So they were outside in the woods right out back. But today, my guest is in the studio with me today because, you see, it is a beautiful, beautiful summer day here in central Vermont, and the sun is shining, and it is perfect weather for doing my favorite summer thing, which is swimming. Anybody out there going swimming today? Well, our guest came all the way back to Vermont in time for the end of summer so that she could go swimming too, because she loves to swim. Who knew that such giant creatures love to swim, right? The largest mammals that live on the land, and they love to swim. Who knew this, right? I just love learning new things. And I learned this about our friend Anne Elephant when she was here last winter. I learned how much she liked to swim. And so we invited her back, of course, for the best time to go swimming in Vermont. Really, the only time to go swimming in Vermont is during the summer. So we need to do as much of it as we can. So she is back in Vermont and back in the studio and ready to teach us more about elephants. Because elephants are just such amazing creatures. There is so much to learn. And elephants actually have a very special way of breathing in the water. Isn't this cool? See, last week we learned about tadpoles and pollywogs and how they turn into frogs and how they have amazing ways of breathing. They start out breathing through gills so they can breathe underwater. Then they grow lungs, so they have to keep coming up to the surface to get air to breathe with their new lungs. And then they transform it into frogs. And they can also, though, breathe a third way through their skin. Well, guess what? Elephants have a special way of breathing underwater, too. Boy, you guys are going to just, this is going to just blow your mind. It's so cool. I love learning and I love life. And so that's why I'm so happy to have my friend Curious Anne Elephant back in the station. And I'm glad to have you here today, especially. Thank you for being you. Let's get started.
Let's go swimming. Hey, hey, yeah.
Swimming, and I tell you how.
You can come swimming too.
Put on your suit and grab your towel.
Here's what you gotta do.
Well, folks, we're going to jump right in. Jump right in the pool. Well, no, not quite yet. Maybe a little later today. We're going to jump right in our interview with Ann Elephant because she is so excited to be here. And we are both celebrating a lot of the same things, as it turns out. We have so much in common. Why don't you, Ann, why don't you, here, I'll bring the microphone over to you a little closer. Why don't you say good morning, Ann?
Well, actually, I want to say happiness and love to everybody here in Vermont. I came all the way back to go swimming, and wow, I have never had such a good time swimming before in my whole life. You're so lucky here in Vermont. You have pools to swim in. You have rivers and brooks with nice cold water. You have lakes and ponds and a big, gigantical lake called Champlain, and I really like the beaches there.
Wow, and it sounds like you have been getting the full tour of Vermont swimming. I'm so happy for you because this is the time of year to do it, to come and take advantage of all the wonderful swimming opportunities here in Vermont.
Yeah, and whenever I go swimming, I think about my grandfather.
Wow, that's interesting. You think about your grandfather when you go swimming. That makes me curious, Anne. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, actually, it was my grandfather who went down to the Limpopo River. Well, he was actually my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, actually. He lived a very long time ago, and he went down to the river, and he came back with a really long nose that we call a trunk, and that's why elephants are the only animals that have a trunk.
Wow, yes, I did notice your beautiful trunk. It is quite an amazing appendage to your body. I guess you're right, yeah, there aren't any other creatures that have one on the planet, just elephants, huh?
Well, actually, yeah, just elephants. And it's thanks to my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and his courage and bravery and his curiosity.
Wow. So why do you think about your grandfather whenever you go swimming? I mean, I understand if you go to a river, but what about if you go to a beach or a pond? Why do you think about your grandfather then, too?
Well, actually, I have an amazing ability, thanks to my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. I can use my trunk to breathe like a snorkel, so I can actually swim underwater for quite a while, as long as I can put my trunk up and get a breath. So, actually, elephants love to swim.
Wow, that is really excellent. You can use it as a snorkel. How completely convenient is that? That is just so great. Wow. Yeah, you know, I have quite a coincidence for you, too. I think about my grandmother every time I go to the beach. And I think about my grandmother because she loved to swim. She didn't have a snorkel for a nose like your grandfather, but my grandmother loved to go to the beach. And her birthday was actually just the other day. And when I was looking up elephants and elephant facts to share with us, with our listeners today, Anne, I found out that guess when World Elephant Day happens to be?
Well, I don't know. You would think I would know when World Elephant Day is, but, you know, we can't know everything. Every day we have to learn something new.
Right. I mean, even about ourselves, right? So World Elephant Day, Anne, is on August 12th, which happens to be my grandmother's birthday, which is probably why she loved to swim, right? Because it turns out that elephants love to swim, too.
Yes, we do. And we're always very careful when we swim. We go with a grown-up, and the grown-ups teach us how.
Oh, that's so cool. That's how it is for us humans, too. Here, let's learn more about that.
So one of the first questions that we get from the visitors is, do elephants get in their pool? And they really do. You're naturally drawn to the water. They love and enjoy being in the water. They usually will go in there at the hot part of the day, sometimes early evening, get all soaked down, splash themselves real good, hang out together. It's a social thing for them. And then come on out and head to the sand pile. But the next question we get is, do they actually swim? And believe it or not, they actually do swim. But swimming is not something that happens automatically. It's a learned behavior. It's something that they learn at a young age. And this brings me to an opportunity to brag about our adult female, Phoebe, who's very, very good at teaching her babies what to do and what not to do. One of those things is swimming. I don't know what she was in her previous life, maybe even a lifeguard or something, because she has a lot of skill when it comes to teaching babies how to swim. She started this with Bodhi, was her first calf born here. We noticed that she was kind of mulling around towards the shallow end of the pool with him, and she seemed to want to bring him in there, but was a little hesitant at first, kind of hung out around the shallows, and she's done this consistent behavior with three calves now, so we know that it's something that is specific to her. She has her own techniques in doing this. It's very interesting to watch. We usually get very nervous, but we know now that she really, really has a plan in what she's doing. So what she typically does, she'll take him to the shallow end of the pool, start out there splashing herself, let him splash himself, get comfortable with the water in general. This pool is a zero entry, so he can step in there, and it steps from just probably about an inch or two all the way down to about 8 feet. So when she starts at the beginning, she'll go into the first step, let him kind of tool around in the water a little bit, kick water about, and as soon as she feels comfortable enough, she'll move to the second step. And then after that, she typically will splash herself wet enough to where she doesn't get that chill, head right on into the deep end with their babies, and starts off by letting him swim around here, because once the ground goes up from up underneath his feet, now we're talking about actual swimming. Elephants have a lot of mass. So that gives them a lot of buoyancy, so they have the luxury of being able to float to a certain extent, but they do need to figure out how to paddle around. So what they're going to do is they're going to paddle around, and he'll typically paddle around Phoebe's body. He'll use that trunk up above the water. You get a little concerned because most of their body is submerged underneath. You only see their eyes. You see the top of their mouth. Every now and then you'll see that trunk come up, and they use it as a snorkel. So that's what they're going to breathe through. So they keep their mouths underwater. So as they're swimming around and looking as if they're struggling, they're really just paddling away. And when they're paddling away like that, they've got a good dog paddle going. So they paddle their way around, get a comfort level with staying above water, using that buoyancy to help them float. Phoebe will follow them around. And then what she will actually do is utilize her front feet to help keep him up or push him forward. She'll sit on her backside down on the deep end, and she'll actually pivot around on her backside all along, bringing the baby around with her. And she'll give plenty of opportunity for the young ones to swim around and figure it out. But when she feels like they've had enough, she'll take them back to the shallow end, let them kind of hang out there, head to the sand pile, show them what you do next, and then it starts all over again the next day. So Phoebe's done this with three calves now. She has a lot of experience. It's super impressive to watch, and there's nothing more exciting to seeing a baby splash around in the water. So yes, they do swim. It's something they learn young, but once they pick it up, it's pretty much an everyday thing.
Yes, it can, a kangaroo. sleep. Yes, it can, a koala can sleep.
Could use your nose to snorkel, or uproot a small tree, or smell water from several miles away. Well, elephants wouldn't be that impressed. They do it on the daily, thanks to what's inside their trunk. If you were to dissect an elephant trunk, it would actually look more like the inside of your tongue than your nose. Trunks, tongues, and even octopus arms are unique organs called muscular hydrostats. That means they're made almost entirely of muscle. And an elephant's trunk has a lot of them, about 40,000, compared to around 650 muscles in the entire human body. Normally, muscles depend on bones and joints to move and exert force. When we pick up a dumbbell, for example, our bicep pulls on our forearm bones, and that causes them to swing up around our elbow joint. But in an elephant trunk, there are no bones to pull and no joints to hinge on. The muscles take on that role instead. This makes trunks incredibly flexible, so they can move in all directions. And all those muscles mean they're powerful enough to lift hundreds of pounds, yet delicate enough to pick up a tortilla chip without even cracking it. But while trunks may be structured like a tongue and function like an arm, they are, in fact, a nose, and an exceptional one. An animal's sense of smell is linked to the number of olfactory receptor genes it has. And elephants, well, they have a lot of them. Nearly 2,000. More than any other animal we know of. Bloodhounds, for example, only have about 800, while humans have even fewer. In fact, an elephant's nose is so good, it can actually sniff out bombs. People have reported that African elephants avoid landmines in Angola. And in 2015, researchers put it to the test. Elephants were presented with a lineup of buckets filled with different smells, including TNT, the main ingredient in landmines. Out of 97 TNT samples, elephants detected all but one. Of course, their trunks didn't evolve as bomb detectors. They used their nose like we use our eyes, to find food and water, to avoid predators, and to map out other elephants nearby. That's like walking into a family reunion with your eyes closed and knowing exactly where everyone is. But if you can believe it, there are even more tricks up their trunks. When elephants traverse deep rivers, for example, they curve their trunk into a snorkel. And when bathing, they can use it as a hose, or more like a fire hose. With one suck, a trunk can pull in as much as 10 liters of water. And the trunk's impressive abilities haven't gone unnoticed. In fact, if you stick a mirror in front of an elephant, one of their favorite activities is to open their mouth and check out the trunks. Let's admit it, if you had a nose like that, you would do the exact same thing.
Elephants, I like elephants. Elephants, I like elephants. I like how they swing through trees. Elephants.
No. What?
Elephants don't swing through trees.
They don't? Well, what am I thinking of?
Monkeys.
Oh, well, in that case.
Monkeys, I like monkeys. I like how they swim in the ocean.
No,
I like...
that's fish. fish.
Oh, I see. Fish. I like fish. I like how they scratch at fleas and sniff at trees and bark at the mailman.
No. Those are dogs.
Ah. Gotta like dogs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Curled up on the windowsill purring and chasing mice.
No.
What then?
Cats.
Cats, of course. Cats. I like cats. I like how they say cock-a-doodle-doo.
No, no, no. They go meow.
They do.
You're thinking of roosters.
Oh. Roosters, I like roosters. I like how they reach into beehives for the honey.
Do that.
Ah, bears. Yes, 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 yes. Bears. I like bears. I like how they jump up high to catch a fly.
No.
And sit on a lily pad.
No, 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 no. Frogs.
Oh. Gotta like frogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maze for some cheese.
No.
Oh.
That's mice.
Oh, mice. Mice. I like mice. I like how they say yee-haw,
no.
Yee-haw.
They go squeak, squeak. That's a donkey.
Donkeys, I like donkeys. I like how they stomp through the jungle with their big gray trunks.
Oh, that's an elephant.
Right, that's like I said. Elephants, I like elephants.
Well, folks, who does not like elephants, really? Elephants are so likable. And that last song was by Eric Herman and the Invisible Band. And I just think it's a great song. And I can see why he's so confused about animals, because just when we think we understand what animals like to do and don't like to do, we learn something new about them. Like me learning about elephants and how much they love to swim. And so I'm sitting here in the studio. Here, I'll bring the microphone over. I have Anne Elephant here today. She's my puppet friend. And she came back to Vermont to go swimming this summer. Anne, why don't you come on over and say hello again?
Well, actually, I'm really glad to be here in Vermont and be swimming. And I really like to swim.
Well, yes, we've been learning about that, and with your amazing trunk, and how that really helps you swim.
Yes, I can breathe through my trunk, so that helps me, because I can stick my trunk up above the water and get a nice big breath of air, because all of us creatures need to breathe, and because elephants are so big and heavy, we do float, but it is hard sometimes to keep our mouth above the water because we just sort of sink just that little bit. But we can definitely put our trunk up above the water, and that's why we can swim for a really, really long time.
I was doing some research, Anne, and I discovered that elephants are actually very well known for their swimming. In some parts of the world, they swim in the ocean from one island to another island. That's a long swim, sometimes for up to 6 hours at a time. Out there in the water. I just think that's so cool. They do need to come to shore to eat. So they'll come to shore when they get hungry. And they also need to come to shore to drink fresh water. you know, if they're in the salty sea, they cannot drink the salt water. So they need to come to shore and find a brook or a pond or something to drink some fresh water out of. So those are the reasons why they might take a break from swimming.
Well, actually, we do need to be careful about swimming. I always bring a grown-up with me, and I also know how to float. See, elephants, because we're so big, we are also buoyant. And buoyant, or buoyancy, means our ability to naturally float and not sink.
Well, that is a very important part of swimming, isn't it? Learning how to float. I know I've been a swimming teacher before, and it is really fun to teach people how to float because it's actually a little bit difficult. You do need to relax. And when you relax, we let our weight, our mass, bring us up to the surface of the water, and then we can float. So for humans, it's important to know how to float too, so that if we ever get tired when we're swimming and we have a long ways to go still, we can take a break and float.
Well, that's really important because even elephants get tired. We have really strong legs, and we can walk a really, really long ways. Our legs are so strong, so we can doggy paddle, or I would call it an elephant paddle in the water. We can spread our toes out, and that makes them more like flippers a little bit, and we can actually do some good swimming that way. But if we need to take a break, it's good to know how to float. You're right about that.
Yeah, definitely. So floating feels good, and it's a good thing to know how to do.
Well, yeah, because the water can be a little bit unpredictable. Sometimes an elephant might get caught in a current in the ocean, and that means you end up really far from the shore, and you have to know how to float and have a buddy with you. Also, when it rains, the water can rise quickly, and yeah.
Well, Anne, you wanted to remember your grandfather's story, and so you asked me to play one more time The Elephant's Child. Well, maybe not one more time. Maybe we'll play it again someday. But Aunt Elephant is up here in Vermont swimming. And like she said, whenever she swims, she thinks about her great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, who was the Elephant's Child. And he's the one who blessed all of the elephants with their wonderful trunks because of his insatiable curiosity. So just like I used to like to listen to my grandmother's stories over and over and over again, we're going to listen to Anne Elephant's grandfather's story again, even though we heard it last winter. It's good to remember these stories because there's a lot of really good lessons in them.
Thank you for listening, everybody, to my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's story. Enjoy.
In the high and far-off times, the elephant, our best beloved, had no trunk. He had only a blackish, bulgy nose as big as a boot that he could wriggle about from side to side, but he couldn't pick up things with it. There was one elephant, a new elephant, an elephant's child, who was full of insatiable curiosity. And that means he asked ever so many questions. And he lived in Africa, and filled Africa with his insatiable curiosities. He asked his tall aunt, the ostrich, why her tail feathers grew just so, and his tall aunt, ostrich, spanked him with her hard, hard claw. He asked his tall uncle, the giraffe, what made his skin spotty, and his tall uncle, the giraffe, spanked him with his hard, hard hoof. And still, he was full of insatiable curiosity. He asked his broad aunt, the hippopotamus, why her eyes were red, and his broad aunt, the hippopotamus, spanked him with her broad, broad hoof. And he asked his hairy uncle, the baboon, why melons tasted just so, and his hairy uncle, the baboon, spanked him with his hairy, hairy paw. And still, he was full of insatiable curiosity. He asked questions about everything he saw, or heard, or felt, or smelt, or touched, and all his uncles and aunts spanked him. And still, he was full of insatiable curiosity. One fine morning in the middle of the procession of the equinoxes, this insatiable elephant's child asked a new fine question that he had never asked before. He asked, "What does the crocodile have for dinner?" Then everybody said, "Hush," in a loud and dreadful tone, and then they spanked him immediately and directly without stopping for a long time. By and by, when that was finished, he came upon a Colocolo bird sitting in the middle of a wait-a-bit thorn bush and said, "My father has spanked me, my mother has spanked me, and all my aunts and uncles have spanked me for my insatiable curiosity, and I still want to know what the crocodile has for dinner." Then the Colocolo bird said with a mournful cry, "Go to the banks of the great gray, green, greasy Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees, and find out." That very next morning, when there was nothing left of the equinoxes because the procession had proceeded according to precedent, this insatiable elephant's child took 100 pounds of bananas, the little short red kind, and 100 pounds of sugar cane, the long purple kind, and 17 melons, the green crackly kind, and said to all his dear families, "Goodbye. I'm going to the great gray, green, greasy Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees, to find out what the crocodile has for dinner." And they all spanked him once more for good luck, though he asked them most politely to stop. Then he went away, a little warm, but not at all astonished, eating melons and throwing the rind about because he could not pick it up. He went from Grahamstown to Kimberley, and from Kimberley to Kama Country, And from Kama country, he went east by north, eating melons all the time, till at last he came to the banks of the great gray-green greasy Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees, precisely as the Kolokolo bird had said. Now you must know and understand, O best beloved, that till that very week and day and hour and minute, this insatiable elephant's child had never seen a crocodile and did not know what one was like. It was all his insatiable curiosity. The first thing that he found was a bicolored python rock snake curled round a rock. "Excuse me," said the elephant's child, most politely, "but have you seen such a thing as a crocodile in these promiscuous parts?" "Have I seen a crocodile?" said the bicolored python rock snake in a voice of dreadful scorn. "What will you ask me next?" "Excuse me," said the elephant's child, "but could you kindly tell me what he has for dinner?" Then the bicolored python rock snake uncoiled himself very quickly from the rock and spanked the elephant's child with his scalesome, flailsome tail. "That is odd," said the elephant's child, "because my father and my mother and my uncle and my aunt, not to mention my other aunt, the hippopotamus, and my other uncle, the baboon, have all spanked me for my insatiable curiosity. And I suppose this is the same thing." So he said goodbye very politely to the bicolored python rock snake, and helped to coil him up on the rock again, and went on, a little warm, but not at all astonished, eating melons and throwing the rind about because he could not pick it up, till he trod on what he thought was a log of wood at the very edge of the great, gray-green, greasy Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees. But it was really the crocodile, O best beloved, and the crocodile winked one eye like this. "Excuse me," said the elephant's child most politely, "but do you happen to have seen a crocodile in these promiscuous parts?" Then the crocodile winked the other eye and lifted half his tail out of the mud, and the elephant's child stepped back most politely because he did not wish to be spanked again. "Come hither, little one," said the crocodile. "Why do you ask such things?"
"Excuse me," said the elephant's child most politely, "but my father has spanked me, my mother has spanked me, not to mention my tall aunt, the ostrich, and my tall uncle, the giraffe, who can kick ever so hard, as well as my broad aunt, the hippopotamus, and my hairy uncle, the baboon, and including the bicolored python rock snake with the scalesome, flailsome tail just up the bank, who spanks harder than any of them. And so, if it's quite all the same to you, I don't want to be spanked anymore."
"Come hither, little one," said the crocodile, "for I am the crocodile." And he wept crocodile tears to show it was quite true. Then the elephant's child grew all breathless and panted and kneeled down on the bank and said,
"You are the very person I've been looking for all these long days. Will you please tell me what you have for dinner?"
"Come hither, little one," said the crocodile, "and I'll whisper." Then the elephant's child put his head down close to the crocodile's musky, tusky mouth, and the crocodile caught him by his little nose, which up to that very week, day, hour, and minute had been no bigger than a boot, though much more useful. "I think," said the crocodile, and he said it between his teeth like this, "I think today I'll begin with the elephant's child."
At this, O best beloved, the elephant's child was much annoyed, and he said, speaking through his nose like this, "Let go. Let go. You're hurting me." Then the bicolored python rock snake scuffled down from the bank and said, "My young friend, if you do not now immediately and instantly pull as hard as ever you can, it is my opinion that your acquaintance in the large pattern leather ulster," and by this he meant the crocodile, "will jerk you yonder into limpid stream before you can say, 'Jack Robin's son.'" This is the way bicolored python rock snakes always talk. Then the elephant's child sat back on his little haunches and pulled and pulled and pulled, and his nose began to stretch. And the crocodile floundered into the water, making it all creamy with great sweeps of his tail. And he pulled and pulled and pulled. And the elephant's child's nose kept on stretching. And the elephant's child spread all his little four legs and pulled and pulled and pulled. And his nose kept on stretching, and the crocodile threshed his tail like an oar, and he pulled and pulled and pulled, and at each pull the elephant's child's nose grew longer and longer, and it hurt him itches. Then the elephant's child felt his leg slipping, and he said through his nose, which was now nearly 5 feet long, "This is too much for me." Then the bicolored python rock snake came down from the bank and knotted himself into a double clove hitch round the elephant child's hind legs and said, "Rash and inexperienced traveler, we will now seriously devote ourselves to a little high tension, because if we do not, it is my impression that yonder self-propelling man-o-war with armor-plated upper deck," and by this, oh best beloved, he meant the crocodile, "will permanently vitiate your future career." That is the way all bicolored python rock snakes always talk. So he pulled, and the elephant's child pulled, and the crocodile pulled. But the elephant's child and the bicolored python rock snake pulled hardest. And at last, the crocodile let go of the elephant child's nose with a plop that you could hear all up and down the Limpopo. Then the elephant's child sat down most hard and sudden. But first he was careful to say, "Thank you," to the bicolored python rock snake. And next he was kind to his poor pulled nose and wrapped it all up in cool banana leaves and hung it in the great gray-green greasy Limpopo to cool. "What are you doing that for?" said the bicolored python rock snake.
"Excuse me," said the elephant's child, "but my nose is badly out of shape and I'm waiting for it to shrink."
"Then you will have to wait for a long time," said the bicolored python rock snake. "Some people do not know what is good for them." The elephant's child sat there for 3 days waiting for his nose to shrink. But it never grew any shorter, and besides, it made him squint. For, oh best beloved, you will see and understand that the crocodile had pulled it out into a really, truly trunk, same as all elephants have today.
the end of the third day, a fly came and stung him on the shoulder. And before he knew what he was doing, he lifted up his trunk and hit that fly dead with the end of it. Vantage number one, said the bicolored python rock snake. You couldn't have done that with a mere smear. No. Try and eat a little now. Before he thought what he was doing, the elephant's child put out his trunk and plucked a large bundle of grass, dusted it clean against his forelegs, and stuffed it into his own mouth. Vantage number two, said the bicolored python rock snake. You couldn't have done that with your mere smear nose. Don't you think the sun is very hot here? It is, said the elephant's child. And before he thought what he was doing, he schlooped up a schloop of mud from the banks of the great gray-green greasy Limpopo and slapped it on his head, where it made a cool, schloopy, schlossy mud cap all trickly behind the ears. Vantage number three, said the bicolored python rock snake. You couldn't have done that with a mere smear nose. Now, how do you feel about being spanked again? Excuse me, said the elephant's child, but I should not like it at all. How would you like to spank somebody? Said the bicolored python rock snake. I should like it very much indeed, said the elephant's child. Well, said the bicolored python rock snake, you will find that new nose of yours very useful to spank people with. Thank you, said the elephant's child. I'll remember that. And now I think I'll go home to all my dear families and try. So the elephant's child went home across Africa, frisking and whisking his trunk. When he wanted fruit to eat, he pulled fruit down from a tree instead of waiting for it to fall as he used to do. When he wanted grass, he plucked grass up from the ground instead of going on his knees as he used to do. When flies bit him, he broke off the branch of a tree and used it as a fly whisk, and he made himself a new cool, slushy, squishy mud cap whenever the sun was hot. When he felt lonely walking through Africa, he sang to himself down his trunk, and the noise was louder than several brass bands. He went especially out of his way to find a broad hippopotamus. She was no relation of his, and he spanked her very hard to make sure that the bicolored python rock snake had spoken the truth about his new trunk. The rest of the time, he picked up the melon rinds that he had dropped on his way to the Limpopo, for he was a tidy pachyderm. One dark evening, he came back to all his dear families, and he coiled up his trunk and said, "How do you do?" They were very glad to see him and immediately said, "Come here and be spanked for your insatiable curiosity." "Pooh," said the elephant's child. "I don't think you peoples know anything about spanking, but I do, and I'll show you." Then he uncurled his trunk and knocked two of his dear brothers head over heels. "Oh,
bananas, said they. Where did you learn that trick? And what have you done to your nose? I got a new one from the crocodile on the banks of the great gray green greasy Limpopo River, said the elephant's child. I asked him what he had for dinner, and he gave me this to keep.
Looks very ugly, said his hairy uncle the baboon.
It does, said the elephant's child. But it's very useful. And he picked up his hairy uncle the baboon by one hairy leg and hove him into a hornet's nest. Then that bad elephant's child spanked all his dear families for a long time till they were very warm and greatly astonished. He pulled out his ostrich aunt's tail feathers and he caught his tall uncle the giraffe by the hind leg and dragged him through a thorn bush. And he shouted at his broad aunt the hippopotamus and blew bubbles into her ear when she was sleeping in the water after meals. But he never let anyone touch the Cola Cola bird. At last, things grew so exciting that his dear families went off one by one in a hurry to the banks of the great gray-green greasy Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees to borrow new noses from the crocodile. When they came back, nobody spanked anybody anymore. And ever since that day, oh best beloved, all the elephants you will ever see, besides all those that you won't, have trunks precisely like the trunk of the insatiable elephant's child.
How did you like that rebroadcast of your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's story, The Elephant's Child?
Well, actually, I like hearing that story over again and over again and over again.
What would you say, Anne, since you've heard it so many times, what would you say the moral of the story is? What is the lesson that your grandfather is teaching everybody with that story?
Well, I think it's about my favorite things. It's about being curious. It's important to be curious. And it's also important to bring a friend with you when you go on your adventures, especially near the water.
Yes, you know, I noticed this time listening to the story that it was really thanks to your grandfather's friend, new friend, the bicolored python rock snake, that he was able to return with his amazing new nose, right? And then become like king of the jungle and sort of ended up being in charge of all the other animals who were giving him such a hard time before.
Yeah, yeah, it was because of his friend. That's a good point. And we can make new friends along the way. But it's really important that we all stick together.
Right, because, you know, a lot of us like to swim. We have that in common. We have a lot of other things in common. And if we stick together, we'll have a lot more fun doing those things together.
Well, yeah, because I like to swim and you like to swim, but we need to come up to the surface to breathe. And so I have a great appreciation for my trunk.
And I am very appreciative of elephants' trunks, too, because I've been learning about that all week, and I did not realize that you guys can do so many things with your trunks.
Yeah, we can sing and smell and breathe and even squirt water. It's a lot of fun having one.
Oh, and speaking of which, Anne, I think you have a joke for us. Don't you have an elephant joke?
Well, yes, I like to bring elephant jokes to the radio show, so here it is. Which is stronger, an elephant or a snail?
Well, elephants are really big, and we just heard about how many muscles they have. Oh, my goodness, I would guess an elephant. Am I right?
Well, no, actually, it's a snail. Because a snail carries its house around with it, an elephant just carries its trunk.
Well, that's a good one, Anne. Good for you. You're the greatest. So are you guys. Have a great week.
Elephants, I like elephants. Elephants, I like elephants. I like how they swing through trees. Elephants.
What?
Elephants don't swing through trees.
They don't? Well, what am I thinking of?
Monkeys.
Oh, well, in that case.
Monkeys, I like monkeys. I like how they swim in the ocean.
No,
I like.
That's fish.
Oh, I see.
Fish. I like fish. I like how they scratch at fleas,
no,
and sniff at trees, and bark at
no,
the
no,
mailman.
No.
No.
Those are dogs.
Ah. Gotta like dogs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Curled up on the windowsill purring,
no,
and chasing mice.
No.
What then?
Cats.
Cats, of course.
Cats. I like cats. I like how they say cock-a-doodle-doo.